Form an offense.
Everything you need to know in sports that affects Maricopa County, the state of Arizona, and the world, you get in 4 minutes. We start things off in downtown Phoenix. Diamondbacks lose 2 out of 3 to the Boston Red Sox Friday. Down 7-2. Brandon Fott, not good. He gets sent down to Reno. They'll bring up a new starting pitcher. That's Zach Davies, who pitched Saturday. Zach Davies, not great. 3 1/3 innings pitched on Saturday. The team, however, only gave up 2 runs. The bullpen, fantastic. 5 2/3 did not give up a run. The offense, terrible. Diamondbacks lose 2-1. Finally, a win on Sunday as they defeat the Red Sox 4-2. Ketel Marte in the game, along with Lourdes Gurriel, went 2-for-4. Perdomo and Carroll each hit a home run. Merrill Kelly struck out 10. Manager, Torrey Lovello.
Because, you lose 3 games in a row. We haven't done that very often this year. And they came out and struck fast and struck aggressively, and I thought it made a really big statement.
Diamondbacks did not lose any ground to the L.A. Dodgers as the Dodgers lost 2 out of 3 to the Tampa Bay Rays. Right now, Diamondbacks a game and a half out of first place. They're also 3 games up on the number one spot in the wild card. They go up against the Colorado Rockies in a day game for Memorial Day. First pitch today at 1:10. It'll be thrown by Ryne Nelson. Arizona Rattlers, another victory in dominating fashion. They defeat the Vegas Nighthawks 63-39 in front of 10,000 people. Drew Powell had more touchdown passes than incomplete passes. He went 11 of 13 from the field, 151 yards, 5 touchdowns, no picks. He even ran in another touchdown. It was Jamal Miles with 6 carries for 71 yards, 2 touchdowns on the ground, and Braxton Haley and Isaiah Houston each had 3 touchdown receptions. Now they go take on Naz, who is tied for second place with the Arizona Rattlers. Kickoff is Saturday in Prescott at 6 o'clock. Rising, a loser at home, 1-0 over the weekend, despite out having more corner kicks, 7-3 than Vegas. Eric Torrey scored in the 78th minute for Vegas to give them the victory. Now, you're taking on a Pittsburgh team Saturday at 4 o'clock that you should win. The importance of that, right now the Rising are tied in 6th place with Colorado Springs. That tie is very important because the top 7 go into the playoffs. Cardinals news over the weekend. DeAndre Hopkins, cut. Kyle Odegaard has reported, formerly he was an employee of the Cardinals, saying the team was upset D-Hop did not push himself to play with a knee injury the last 2 games. The Cardinals will save $8.1 million on the salary cap by cutting him, but they'll have $22.6 million as a cap hit, even though DeAndre Hopkins isn't even playing. Now, the other big news, there's a potential settlement slash conversation going on with a former employee. She could be filing and be the second person to go to arbitration with the NFL against the Arizona Cardinals for her treatment by Michael Bidwill. But they could be able to pay her off, and she might not actually turn in the arbitration case. Stay tuned to WTSMTV.com for the latest. Coming up today, 9 o'clock this morning, the NCAA baseball tournament field is announced. ASU, right now, we have no word on whether or not the Sun Devils are going to make the NCAA tournament. They are right on the bubble. We'll project it as probable. Stay tuned, and we'll give you the latest coming up at 9 o'clock. And finally, only in Canada would you have someone this nice. It's called the Sweet Something Bakery, where a man walked around for 20 minutes and decided, I'm going to break the glass and I'm going to break into this store. But then what did he do when he got inside? He felt so terrible that he mopped up the glass all in the front of the bakery. Then he started taking selfies on a phone that was left in the store. Then after that, he helped himself to 6 cupcakes, ate them while sitting in the store, and then walked out with a very clean floor. Only in Canada, even robbers are very nice people to clean up after themselves.
The official golf course of Doug Franz Unplugged is Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. I love that because it follows the tradition. that sponsors of Doug Franz Unplugged are members of the Unplugged Army. It's just so cool that such a high-end, gorgeous golf course is there for all of us. I don't care what your skill level is. A scratch golfer will be challenged, and a golfer as bad as me is not going to be embarrassed. Go to whirlwindgolf.com and feel the wind. And tell them you're in the Unplugged Army.
I'm Janelle, General Manager of Bell's Nashville Kitchen, a.k.a. the Whiskey Wizard. Bell's isn't your typical country bar with mediocre bar food. We are a scratch kitchen with chef-inspired dishes, and the only place you can get the best sandwich in all of Arizona, our Nashville Hot Chicken Sandwich. Now, the drinks. I spend days infusing our own whiskey creations. Come in for Whiskey Wednesdays to learn about and drink our famous whiskey selection. We have live music most days and all weekend as part of our honky-tonk brunch.
Bell's Nashville Kitchen on Main Street in Old Town Scottsdale. You found home. Down home.
Oh my gosh. The insanity of this weekend is something that is impossible for me to explain to you. The ups and downs, the trials and the tribulations, the wonderful times, the difficult times, and all of this happened in one weekend. And now, poor Jeff Weir production, everything's being dumped on his plate. Good luck, Jeff. Oh, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever it is that you've decided to make Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day, my family greatly appreciates it. My name is Doug Franz, and you have found the only podcast in the world totally devoted to the coverage of the four major sports franchises of one great American city that drops on your phone each and every weekday morning. We also cover ASU, U of A, GCU, the Rattlers, the Rising, and the Merck. This is Doug Franz Unplugged. Hello. Wow. I can't stress to you enough how crazy today has been. First of all, cheers to our troops. Granted, I just did a toast drinking water, of course, I realize. Hi. How is your Memorial weekend going so far? Again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you to all of you who have been serving our nation, who are a veteran, whatever you're dealing with now that you're home, please talk to somebody and please know that you're loved, appreciated. And for those of you that have a loved one that paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country on this Memorial Day, how are you? Hopefully you're doing the best that you can possibly do. And we thank you for your brother, your sister, your dad, your mother, your cousin, your aunt, your uncle, whoever it was that lost their life for our nation. Just cheers to you is all we can say. Put our arm around you and say thank you on this Memorial Day. And please, as I said to you on Friday, please talk to your kids about the meaning of Memorial Day and what today means. My weekend has been really, really strange. Got a visit from a friend on Friday that went very well. And then our Saturday turned upside down, had a dear friend that is still suffering from a stroke. Yes. And I just feel like, wait a minute, we're too young for that. But of course, you know, of course, we're not too young for that. That can happen. So Jennifer has been on a vigil nonstop at the hospital for the last couple of days. And I've enjoyed some great time with my daughters, went to the Rattlers game on Saturday night, obviously doing the work for WTSMTV.com, but did it without Jennifer. And we may do, you know, we had a really, the three of us had a wonderful time, but there was still something missing. Met with Ryan and Tiffany afterwards and spent some great time with them. So that was wonderful to be able to do that and have a beer afterwards. And the Rattlers are just absolutely on fire right now. I mean, it's crazy how well they're playing, in which they had a game last weekend against Naz and won that game. And then this weekend, they're tied with Vegas for the final spot in the playoffs, crushed both teams in the last 2 weeks at home. So now the Rattlers have moved up into a tie for second place with Northern Arizona. And who do they play this Saturday? They're at Northern Arizona in Prescott. Winner of that game could possibly be tied with Bay Area for first place. And then who do the Rattlers play after that? Bay Area at home. in 2 weeks on a Sunday afternoon. So it's a crazy moment if you're a Rattlers fans, but a Rattler fan, but boy, they look fantastic. And then today, cheers to Chris Weir, CEO Chris, Jeff Weir Production. The reason why I say kudos, I had planned to do the whole show, record it, get it sent in overnight on Sunday night. And as I was working on the show, I fell asleep, like just boom, totally out, and slept from about 9 o'clock at night until 3:30 in the morning. So now I'm scrambling everywhere to try to get the show, and they've got to be able to produce it and get it up. It is a nightmare scenario for CEO Chris and Jeff Weir Production. Guys, I'm so sorry for being late in turning in everything, but thanks for making everything run. And thanks a lot to Steve and Izzy, who are going to handle the conversation coming up at about 7:40 all on their own. And also to help create the timing to be correct for today's show to make it a little better. Sound credits today. Bally Sports Arizona provided us for the Diamondback sound with Torrey Lovello from their win yesterday. So we'll be playing that a little bit later. And that's the only sound credit I have. And today's show is going to be a little different, a mix and match between sports and our country. And I'm excited to tell you more about that coming up. But in the meantime, let me give you Doug's big one. Let's roll.
Doug's big one.
There's a lot going on with the Arizona Cardinals, even though it's a holiday. Let me tell you about the two things. One, you know an awful lot about because it happened on Friday, on a Friday news dump. And that is DeAndre Hopkins being let go by the Arizona Cardinals. The story there, a lot of people have come up to me, tweeted me. I golfed over the weekend and somebody asked me that it was on the golf course. Just tell me why they just didn't trade him for a seventh round pick. Couldn't they get anything for him? Listen, DeAndre Hopkins is the most overrated, overpaid player in the NFL right now. I mean, nobody wants to say that, but it's true. DeAndre Hopkins sat out the last two games last year totally healthy, so that shows he's not in it for the long haul, trying to protect himself instead of doing what the team is paying him to do. Number two, DeAndre Hopkins, the number one ability is availability. He doesn't have that. He's been hurt for most of his career as a member of the Arizona Cardinals, and he's going to be being paid over $20 million. Why would another team want that? See, if you trade for DeAndre Hopkins, you are giving, let's say you give a seventh round pick. You give that pick to the Cardinals and you now take that contract. So just like the Cardinals don't want to pay him for this coming season, nobody else wants to pay him on that contract. That's why you have to cut him, because somebody else is thinking, I can sign free agent DeAndre Hopkins if I want him and pay him exactly what I want to negotiate. That makes a lot more sense than picking up the ridiculous contract that DeAndre Hopkins had and isn't playing hard on. So why would you want to do that? Now, the way the salary cap works, the number this year was going to be around $30 million on the salary cap if they keep him. So if you cut him, you don't owe him any of the salary for this year. So that portion is no longer attributed to the cap. So the Cardinals save about $8.1 million off of the salary cap. The catch is there's $22.5 million in dead cap money. So it's not like money that's being paid out by the team right now. They've already paid him his signing bonus a long time ago. So he's already got his money, but it's attributed to the cap. Great way to explain it. Let's say I sign you to a 40-year, $20 million deal, okay? If there's no signing bonus, then it's really simple. It's $5 million a year. Every year that you're on the roster comes off the salary cap, and I give you $5 million a year. If I cut you after year two, I don't owe any money to the salary cap because I only owe on the salary cap what I'm paying you in salary. If I mix in a signing bonus, which happens to everybody actually, then the signing bonus gets divided out every year as well. But since I've already paid you, if I cut you, I owe on the salary cap the remainder amount of money that comes in a signing bonus.
So let's say instead of a four-year, $20 million contract of $5 million a year, let's say I give you a four-year, $20 million contract, but I give you a $16 million signing bonus. And then I sign you, in a sense, to a $1 million a year for 4 years. If I cut you now after year two, I save the $2 million in salary that I was going to be giving you, but I still owe the rest of the signing bonus. So I took a $4 million cap hit in year one, $4 million cap hit in year two for your signing bonus. I said the signing bonus was $16 million. So that means there's still $8 million remaining in signing bonus. You got your money. You got all $16 million. But because I tried to divide out the salary cap hit in order to stretch it out over 4 years, I still owe $8 million more against the cap. So that's the signing bonus. Now, there's another thing if you want to know, if you don't mind me going deep, there's a thing called a June 1st designation. If you cut somebody after June 1st, which is exactly what will happen, he's been designated as a June 1st cut. Now you're allowed to divide out that signing bonus over 2 years. So now in my example, I still owe $8 million on the salary cap, but I can charge the 23 salary cap with $4 million, and I can charge the 24 salary cap with $4 million. Now with D-Hop, I think the Cardinals are going to take the whole thing this year because Michael Bidwell is trying to lose. He doesn't want to spend money this year. And because they're going to lose on purpose, why stretch out the cap hit for another year? So they're going to kind of finagle the numbers and keep that mostly in-house on the 23 salary cap. I'm sorry, I just scratched something over here and now I have this terrible pain on my shoulder. If you've noticed, I keep going over here. Who knows what I just scratched off of my shoulder this morning. Okay, so that's Cardinals, the simple stuff. Now let's go deeper into the news that we have this week. The Arizona Cardinals are in conversation with a lawyer out of Southern California for there's new allegations that could come out in which a woman is alleging that she was mistreated by Michael Bidwell when she was an employee of the Arizona Cardinals. This woman might go to arbitration. She might file for arbitration, and that means it goes to the NFL in the same way that the Terry McDonough situation is going. The Cardinals don't want this story to get out. So this is obviously between you and I. It's reasonably breaking news. There are a lot of people that know bits and pieces about it. Nobody knows as much as I do about the situation, other than, of course, the woman, the lawyer, and the Arizona Cardinals in general. So that's where we are. If they are able to reach a settlement, that will be the end of this, and that saves the Arizona Cardinals a ton of embarrassment. However, the way this woman feels, she is very poised to take this to arbitration and prepared to do it. So they have basically a case ready, and they're considering whether or not they should turn this in. If they turn it in, it'll become enormous national news. If they don't, they accept a settlement, it'll be one of those things that gets a little bit of attention for a couple hours and then dies off quickly. And I think that's exactly what the Arizona Cardinals want. The catch is she wants to tell her story. So you're going to have to pay her enough to get her to say, okay, I won't tell my story anywhere. But this is another example of the dysfunction that's going on right now with the Arizona Cardinals. So keep a very close eye on this situation, because we have no idea how this is going to go. And if they don't settle, boom, this is going to be huge. I don't really judge either side on the settlements because I understand why this woman might be able to get life-changing money. And for all of the drama that she feels that has incurred, maybe it's going to be worth it to her. And then she's got a different life. However, she's really interested in protecting a lot of other people and a lot of her coworkers. And because of that, she might want to fight on and keep going with this thing. So that's where that stands. This news should probably break tomorrow or Wednesday on whether or not there was a settlement or whether or not an arbitration case was filed. It's coming this week, as far as I can speculate. But yes, that is speculation on when this actually occurs. So that's this conversation. conversation. That's the latest with the Arizona Cardinals and the dysfunction that has totally gripped this franchise, or has been gripping the franchise for some time, and it's been kept quiet, and now it's coming out via Doug Franz Unplugged. All right, coming up next. You know how I feel about the country, and hopefully I do a good job representing everything to do with Memorial Day. A couple weeks ago, I had the cool opportunity to go to the Grand Canyon University Golf Course. Now, remember, Whirlwind Golf Club of Wild Horse Pass, Whirlwind Golf Club of Wild Horse Pass, the presenting sponsor of Doug Franz Unplugged. But it was a GCU professor who lives on the west side. It was more convenient for him to meet there. His name is Kevin Miller. He's a professor of history. And I thought it would be really cool to talk heavily into the United States of America and what Memorial Day means, how it started, things like that. So that's what this is about with Kevin Miller. And just to kind of introduce the possibility, we're also working on a new show that will be about the history of sports in Arizona. And this is your chance to meet Kevin Miller, because he's one of the people that will be co-hosting that show. It'll take a while before we get that show off the ground, but I really want that to be a special show. So I want to introduce you to my friend Kevin. I want to introduce you to America's Memorial Day, and that's coming up next on the Home of the Rattlers. This is Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass on WTSMTV.com.
Well, Unplugged Army, I've always had a fun time with you, pretending that we're an army, but you know me well enough to know it's not serious. Well, today, we're actually getting serious about our armed forces. It's a special Memorial Day edition of Doug Franz Unplugged. This is Professor Kevin Miller. He's a member of the Unplugged Army, and he's a professor at GCU. And I figured, you know what, let's just spend some time talking American history, weaving in sports stories and things like that on the greatest country in the history of the globe. Obviously an opinionated statement, but no one's been able to prove me wrong on that, so I'll keep riding that. First of all, welcome. Thanks for being a member of the Unplugged Army. How are you?
Good. Thank you for letting me be here. This is exciting.
Good.
By the way, I also teach at American Indian College, also in the Valley.
Okay.
So I do two different schools, teach history, military history also.
Well, that's wonderful. Take 3 minutes and tell us, why do we have Memorial Day? We all just look at it as, let's remember the fallen, but how did it start? Where did we get here?
Absolutely. So Memorial Day is our most solemn, sacred holiday, really, if you think about it, right? You know, today we celebrate it by, what, barbecues and ball games, right? But it's really a day of remembrance for those who have fallen. And to remember, like, the history of it, we have to go all the way back to the Civil War. And during the Civil War, we look at this massive amount of casualties and death that took place in a very short span of years, 4 years, right? Over 600,000 people were killed in that war. And so the earliest form of a Memorial Day was called Decoration Day, where you would go and you would spend the day decorating the grave of your loved one. It was always April and May, right, when the flowers were in bloom, and you cut fresh flowers and go lay them on the grave of your loved one. And so that became kind of a unofficial holiday, essentially, in 1868 with General Grant and his lovely bride. They went to Arlington, which had formerly been Robert E. Lee's home, and they turned it into a cemetery in one of the great moments of the war, right? And he gave speeches, and there were sermons, and there were prayers, and it was this kind of this national day of mourning, just, oh, our loss. And so it was really a catalyst to kind of coping with the loss from the war. So we fast forward a few years, right? And Decoration Day has taken on this kind of life of its own. It becomes this annualized event. Every year they would celebrate Decoration Day. But by the end of World War I, they were starting to kind of expand that idea from just decorating to an actual memorialization of the dead. And so in the 1920s, 1930s, they would celebrate by setting up statues and plaques. Gettysburg Address was always a hit, right? That they would memorialize those who went before. World War II happens. Again, huge outpour of death and chaos in our country. And so we, again, need to grieve as a nation. And so having that day where we can just let go, right? Where we can just feel the loss. Fast forward again, right, to the 1960s, and you have Lyndon Johnson. We're at the height of Vietnam. And again, we have casualties coming in every night. We see it on the news, right? 1966, 67. And Lyndon Johnson sets aside an official federal holiday of Memorial Day. 1968, they decide, hey, all these holidays, we're gonna put them on Mondays, and so we get the day that we have now. And so fast forward to 2023, we're still celebrating, but it's a day of remembrance, right? That we mourn those who are lost. It is a very different day from Veterans Day, where we celebrate those who fought for us. But Memorial, it's a little more solemn occasion. It's sadder, right? Mm-hmm. But it's no less important.
Obviously, this is a sports show, so we have some amazing speeches in sports. Really stick it to you on this question. Greatest speech in American history.
Boy, that is a great question. I would have to say George Washington's farewell address.
Okay, why?
His farewell address was exactly what our nation needed, and we ignored it. It was this beautiful speech.
You think we're involved in Europe every now and then? Is that
a little bit, right? It's this beautiful speech of just kind of a like guidance, right? The grandfatherly guidance of here's a man who could have been dictator for life, mm-hmm. and he chose instead to retire, to go have peace and quiet on his farm, which is pretty amazing to think about. Here's somebody who's given the keys to the kingdom, and he's like, I'm good, right? I'll pass.
I think if I'm right, the first paragraph of that speech, he says something about, now this is a loose quote, so give you a little bit of room, but we are in the midst of a time that is upcoming where we must choose a leader from among us. Right. And he makes it sound like he's equal to everybody else when we know he's not.
Absolutely. So he always considered himself just a citizen, right? If you asked George Washington, if he was in the room with us, right, you say, George, what's your role? He'd say, I'm just another citizen like you, right? Beautifully humble man. Now, he has kind of a checkered past with slavery and things like that, but really just his soul seems pretty pure. And in his farewell address, he said, he warned us. Oh, it was beautiful. He says, don't get involved in politics, right? Don't get involved in political parties. He's like, they're only going to divide you. It's going to be this wedge that drives between brothers and between families. Sounds familiar, right? You know, he said, political parties open you up to the flames of passion, right? And that they open you up to the potentiality of foreign involvement in politics, right? And so if you go through his list, right? Check, 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 right? He kind of nails it. So that's why I think it's the most important speech, but also the one we kind of quietly forget about.
Well, it is why for me, I would name him the number one American of all time. And it's especially that great story. The Revolutionary War, a lot of people think the Revolutionary War was a week and a half or so. And it's 7.5 years and he goes home once. In 7.5 years, goes home once. And it was only because the battle took him by the farm. He thought, well, I better stop in and see how everything's going. And that was it. So he's amazing. You know, and since I said number one, let's do something. Let's invite you in as a guy that's been a hardcore listener to the old show, to Unplugged. You've done a lot for the Unplugged Army, so I'm just going to throw this out there. You remember when we used to do this on the old show that threw Wolf for a loop and he had no idea it's coming. Now, I have no music to shock the professor with, but we're going to go through an impromptu power poll. We are going to name our top five Americans when he has no idea this is coming. So, therefore, boom, I will start it off with number five. My number five greatest American of all time is Ronald Reagan. And the reason why I'm going to go with Ronald Reagan is for those, well, there's also a pretty good argument for Grant. I love Ulysses S. Grant. But I'm going to go with Ronald Reagan because a lot of people don't realize that he was a Democrat and then decided that he was going to move to the conservative side of the Republican Party. And he says, the Democrats, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. They left me. Then my favorite moment is a senator from Texas decided to leave the Democratic Party, and all the Democrats said, it's not fair, a Democrat should be named to fill his seat. Other people in the Republican Party said, great, become a Republican immediately so we can switch the vote. And he said, I don't want to run and have won the election on somebody else's money. So I want to resign and run again. And the Republicans were furious at him, the Democrats were furious at him, and he went to see Ronald Reagan. And Reagan said, I think you should do the right thing. And the senator said, what is that? And he goes, That's up to you. And didn't push him to jump into the Republican Party immediately. Let him choose his way. He backed out and resigned, came back and ran on a Republican ticket and won. So I'm going to go with Reagan. What's your number five?
Number five. Boy, I love Reagan, but I'd probably move him up a little higher.
Okay, okay. It'll be an interesting battle as we move up the line here.
Number five, I've got a kind of an oddball, okay. Right? It's somebody that I just, in study, I just fell in love with kind of his character, right? And he doesn't make anybody else's even probably top 20 list, but okay. I'm going to throw him at five because I'm aggressive. Grover Cleveland.
Oh, no, I was not ready for that. Grover okay. Cleveland. Where's he from?
Ohio.
Oh, good
right?
Bobcats.
Go Bobcats, right? Yeah, Grover Cleveland, great American, right? And so he was a Democrat, and you know, I'm not sure where we want to go with politics, but you know, he was a good man, uh-huh. And that's he was a great listener of the people, and that's something I value in a politician. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's going to listen to the people, and you know, Grover Cleveland was president twice, non-consecutively, right? He was the 22nd.
Benjamin Harrison in between, right?
Right.
Okay.
22nd and the 24th president,
mm-hmm.
Right? So he listened to the people. He was a true populist. And give me that in a politician all day. Somebody who doesn't come in with their own agenda, doesn't come in with this, you know, grandiose uh-huh. plan. Just what do the people want? Let's
Good.
Do that.
My number four would be Ben Franklin, because without Ben, who knows if we become a country, because we needed France's money. And we needed his leadership when he decided, after visiting with the British, flipping his ideas and saying, you know what, I'm actually an American. And for the first time, he decided to become an American, even though, of course, he was, you know, raised as an American, but that's not the way they thought at the time. And then the leadership, and then plus he's just strange. And I love the stories, and I love how he understood in France, I better become like the French if I want French money. When John Adams thought he was a lunatic and was so furious that he wouldn't work hard enough on their diplomatic missions. What about you? Number four.
Number four. Let's go with Sherman.
Oh, wow. I love how you're reaching.
General okay. Sherman. He was...
Is it for the middle name?
No.
Okay.
He was a pragmatist, right? He was a warrior, first of all, right? What he wanted to do, though, he saw this great big war happening in the Civil War. He knew it could drag on endlessly. He took a wild swing at the fence and tried something new. He unleashed hell upon Georgia, right? I'm from Georgia. I'm mm-hmm. from Atlanta. Growing up, Sherman was a dirty word in my house, right? But over the years studying, I just come to admire him and the moral fortitude he had in, I'm going to stick it to these guys so I can end the war, right? He did what he did so that he could stop the war, mm-hmm. to end casualties. Right? So we wound up saving maybe hundreds of thousands of people.
Wow. That's beauty. You're a lot better at this than me. Number three, I'm going to go with one of probably my favorite athlete of all time, and that is Jackie Robinson. Not only court-martialed by the United States of America and was exonerated for that, but also played three different positions in 3 years in breaking the color barrier. He was a shortstop with the Kansas City Monarchs. The next year, he's second baseman with the Montreal Royals, the AAA team of the Dodgers, and then he was forced to play first base when he first became a Dodger, wins the first ever Rookie of the Year while his wife and him are getting death threats and she's sitting right there and he's always scared to death. Somebody is going to shoot her and he bats 300 his rookie year. Then decides he's going to become a Republican at one point, which is totally counter to his race at the time. But then the Republicans at that time were too stupid to understand his message and so they keep him at arm's length. Then he's a man without a party. Continues to fight for civil rights his entire life, dies in 1972, basically due to quote-unquote diabetes, but it's really because of the hard life he was forced to leave and had dignity throughout and is the definition of what we should all strive to be as an American.
Excellent. Yeah, I love Jackie Robinson. Just what an amazing character. Oh. My good friend, Colonel Dick Tolliver, he was a Tuskegee Airman, went to the Tuskegee Institute, and he fondly recalls stories of listening to Jackie Robinson give speeches.
Oh, amazing.
And so you know, he's imparted that love of Jackie to me also. So I'm gonna riff off of that Jackie Robinson by saying Booker T. Washington is
okay.
my number three.
That's it.
Right? The Booker T. Washington kind of set the bar right? That he built on what Frederick Douglass started and kind of took that to the next level and said, look, cast your bucket down where you are, right? If you want to get ahead, right, don't play everybody else's game. Do what's in front of you, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's timely advice for all of us even today, right? Do what's in front of you, right? Mm-hmm. Don't try to make trouble somewhere else. Start with where you're at.
My number two would be Abraham Lincoln. And that it's interesting. The only man that I think could challenge you on your choice of this of the farewell address of George Washington would either be Gettysburg or the second inaugural address of Abraham Lincoln. And who knows what kind of country we have today if it's not for Abraham Lincoln.
Absolutely. Good choice, right? It's hard to go wrong with old Abe. For my number two, let's see. I think this is where I'll put George Washington.
Oh, okay. I'm anticipating now for number one.
I think that just his character, his demeanor, his fortitude, that you know, again, he was offered everything and he chose, you know, they asked him on his first day in office, they're like, what do you want to be called? And they listed off grandiose titles, His Majesty, His Royal, you know, His whatever, right? They listed off dozens and dozens of titles. And he just looked at him, shook his head and said, just call me Mr. President. Right? That humility that he brought.
But it's still a title for the authoritativeness of the position.
Absolutely.
But not himself.
He owned the position without letting it own him.
Yeah, yeah. So I've already said mine is George Washington. So you've built it up pretty good. Who is your number one American of all time?
Number one, I'm going to say Thomas Sowell. And you probably didn't expect that.
I did. Well, as soon as you said Thomas, I was going to be like, okay, I like Jefferson, but I wouldn't, you know, and then, wow, I didn't see this coming.
Thomas Sowell, I believe, is the greatest American. Okay. And he's probably the one that most people know the least about, mm-hmm. right? The Thomas Sowell was a young kid. He grew up in Harlem, right? He grew up in this rough town and you know, had a little bit of North Carolina and Harlem growing up. And he could have gone many different directions in life. But one of the places he went was a library, right? Thomas Sowell got a library card for the New York Public Library, went inside that library and discovered a whole different world from the one outside of the doors. And so he went and he started reading and he became a Marine. And he became a Marine at, you know, this is the end of Korea, so before Vietnam, and served his time honorably. And then the beautiful thing is the GI Bill, which is probably the greatest single piece of legislation our country has ever done. And Thomas Sowell gets to go to whatever college he can get into. And so, you know, he sets his sight pretty low. He goes to Harvard. And he graduates. Here's this kid from Harlem who goes to Harvard. Now, he was a communist during college. And then he went to work for the US government after graduating, right? He went to the University of Chicago and he studied under the great Milton Friedman, right? So he's learning all kinds of wonderful things about capitalism and the free market. He goes to work for the government. And within a few months of working for the government, he realized he is no longer a communist. That he's like, it would never work in the real world. So he's my number one choice for an American.
I'm glad you're here. That was fantastic. Now, coming up next, I want to get into American history as it relates to sports. American sports' place in our nation's history and how the two have become intertwined so often in our history. That's coming up next. This is Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass.
There are so many different reasons to call Parker & Sons heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical. I had a problem with an outdoor appliance recently, called Parker & Sons, figured it could be electrical. They checked my fuse box and let me know that some of the fuses had been installed improperly. It could have caused a fire. You can't just trust anyone with the safety of your family. Thank goodness I had a trust-certified technician from Parker & Sons to find it. Call 602-2-REPAIR. That's 602, the number 2, then REPAIR for Parker & Sons. Rosati Sports Pub in Chandler. It's on Ray and McQueen. Sounds like a sports bar. What's the difference? You walk in and they actually have games on TV with the sound on. How many times do you walk into a supposed sports bar and they've got loud music on or somebody playing live or some kind of trivia game going on and you're there to watch the game? If you're like me, a simple guy, give me my pizza, give me my wings, give me my cold beer, and make sure I can hear the Suns and D-backs, then you want Rosati Sports Pub at Chandler. All members of the Unplugged Army, welcome. Rosati Sports Pub, give me the game.
Well, I think you know this, but in case you don't, Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass.
As we say that, I do want to say a special thank you to Grand Canyon University. We're actually inside part of their restaurant that's the 19th hole of the Grand Canyon University Golf Club. And it's really a wonderful place to be. And they told me something special. If you're a member of the Unplugged Army, for $200, you can have a 30-day pass to golf as often as you want. Now, there's got to be an available tee time. You can't kick somebody out of their tee time. So please understand, it's Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. You know, I want to say that a lot. But when someone's nice enough to invite us over, and this is a GCU professor in Professor Miller, we thought, you know what, let's come over here. He lives on the west side, so do I, so it became a natural thing. So I wanted to give GCU a free plug, and I have played the course. Not today, but I have played the course, and I enjoy it very, very much. And especially now, because for the last 8 seconds, I actually felt a little bit of air conditioning, which is very important to all of us as we sit in here. Let's go into the sports side of our American history. And this was probably about 10 years ago. I'm at Goodyear Ballpark, and there's a man that's sitting there, and I'm trying to think, okay, I can't really believe it's who I think it is, but it can't be. No way, no way. Then they announce it's Bob Feller. Bob Feller used to come to games for the Cleveland, at the time, Indians, and that's where he pitched for so many years. He holds a crazy record. He's the only pitcher in the history of baseball to throw a no-hitter and never drop anybody's batting average while doing it. That's because he did it on opening day, and everybody had a zero going into the game, and they had a zero coming out of the game. He's the only one to throw a no-hitter on opening day. But he actually kept himself in shape in World War II, running around an aircraft carrier in between Japanese kamikaze runs. That's insane. And so many of our athletes were asked, sometimes forced, to serve in World War II, but they all had, not all, but a lot of them had some cushy jobs. Bob Feller served in World War II.
Absolutely.
Tell me a story about athletes.
So, athletes are amazing, right? You know, just the physical shape, and that's, if you're in the military, that's what you want. You want that guy who's capable of doing anything, right? You know, the famous story of Cassius Clay, right?
Yes.
That he was asked to serve, and he said no thank you, right? Because of his convictions, his beliefs. You know, pretty controversial then and today, right? Mm-hmm. But still, it's a man of principle who held to what he believed in.
Yes.
One of my favorite stories about sports in the military was during the Civil War, that as this horrible war is taking place, right? Brother versus brother, you know, family versus family being torn apart, there were also quiet moments. And sometimes during those quiet moments on the front line, a baseball game would start. Right? That guys would get up and they'd maybe start playing catch. And then, you know, from there it was, okay, we'll get a bat. Let's lay out some bases, right? They're gonna start playing a game. Right? And it's beautiful stories like that, you know, just kind of creates this moment in history where you see humanity, mm-hmm. right? You see this moment where, wow, these are just guys, right? They're just young men out there having fun.
I don't know where along the front lines it happened, and I'm sure that you'll be able to retell the story better than me, but I took a massive World War I class when I was in college, and we learned of a story of that there was no fighting on Christmas Day one year, and people came out of the trenches, and there was a legitimate Allied versus German soccer game in the middle of no man's land.
Absolutely.
That almost, I mean, it almost brings you to tears of thinking, could we have not just figured out a way to just say, okay, next goal wins, and then move on from the war?
Absolutely. And that actually sort of became a tradition, that we had this unspoken kind of Christmas Day truce. And during Christmas Day, often it would be, you know, my favorite story is World War II. Mm-hmm. And Americans heard this beautiful singing across the way, you know, they're in their foxholes, it's late at night, and they hear this beautiful singing of Silent Night. And so the Americans join in, right? And it's this beautiful moment for everybody. Mm-hmm. And the very next day, you know, they're back to fighting. And, you know, later that night, as things kind of quiet down, as usually happened, you know, the Americans called over, hey, sing another song. And unfortunately, the German was killed during the battle of that day. And they're like, you know, so there's that sweet moment.
Yeah.
And I think that's speaks a lot to kind of humanity itself, right? That we're very complex. We're amazingly complex creatures, and I teach this in my class all the time. That we're that we have these complex motives, right? That, you know, it's hard to find true villains and true heroes, but they do exist. But most of us are kind of somewhere in the middle, right? We have good days and bad days. You know, we're going to sing one night and we're going to fight the next.
I'm assuming you know the story, but it's always rude to say that because, let's face it, Professor Miller is going to have a lot more stories than I will. But I want to throw you one, and if you know it, please keep going. The story of Mo Berg. Are you familiar with Mo?
I'm not.
Mo Berg, it's a funny line that said Mo Berg supposedly could speak in 8 languages and he couldn't hit in any of them. He was a backup catcher in the American League, and he was also an American spy. He, as a catcher, was brilliant in speaking other languages. Well, they had this tour in the time they used to send American baseball players over to Japan to spread the game and play in exhibitions against the Japanese. One of them just happened to take place right before World War II. So the government sent Mo Berg with a camera. And he went on all the sightseeing tours with the baseball players and would come up on the highest buildings and then take film of the players. And in truth, the players never figured out why they were hardly ever in any of his shots, because he continually shot it over their head or beside them and would take views from skyscrapers over the rest of Tokyo. That way, the American government had film on Tokyo to be able to plan things out. And then he also, well after his playing career, was given an assignment. He was supposed to go to Germany and listen to this amazing professor speak, and they wanted him to assassinate this German professor because he was leading the charge to build the German atomic bomb. So he goes to this thing, but here's what the American government didn't know. Mo Berg spent 9 months before planning this event. He actually studied and taught himself nuclear physics. He goes to this speech, I'm sorry I don't remember the professor's name, with a single bullet handgun and a cyanide capsule with him. Listens to the speech, and when the speech is over, Mo Berg gets up and leaves. The government says, wait, why didn't you assassinate him? And he said, because I could tell by his speech they're so far away from the bomb, there was no reason to kill him. This is a baseball player deciding we don't need to assassinate a German professor because he's not going to be able to build the bomb in time. This is incredible, the story of Mo Berg. Give me another story from you.
Story. It's Memorial Day, right? We can't talk about Memorial Day, and being from Arizona, we can't really do this talking about sports without talking about Pat Tillman.
Oh,
right?
Thank you.
And to me, Pat Tillman is, you know, he can easily be in our
Back
top
to the
five,
great American,
right?
Yes.
He could be on our top list, right? Here's a man, had everything, had the world, right? Top of his game, football player, right? Beautiful life, beautiful family, big contract, right? And he gives it all up so that he could go and enlist and fight. And how beautiful is that story, right? That, you know, here's a man who gave up everything. He sacrificed it all, literally on the field of battle for America.
I'm so glad you said that, but I admit, as soon as you said Arizona, I didn't think of Pat Tillman. I thought you were either going to go Pearl Harbor or Senator McCain. And that's
it's
isn't it amazing the Arizona February 14th, 1912 were a state, and yet we do have, we are intertwined very deeply in American history.
Funny story. So the USS Arizona, right? Tragically, we lost it on Pearl Harbor Day, December 6th, you know, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. I have that speech practically memorized.
Yep.
But the USS Arizona had a pretty illustrious career before that, right? She was laid down in 1914, right? Named after the 48th state. And didn't see service in the World War I until the very end. And she was the ship that took President Woodrow Wilson over to Europe to sign the peace treaty,
wow,
right? To set up, you know, the League of Nations and to kind of be this catalyst. And so the USS Arizona got to play this pivotal role in escorting a president across the country. And, you know, shortly after, she was transferred over to the Pacific, where she served pretty nobly. And then just, you know, was the focus point of the attack by the Japanese.
Absolutely. The story of the national anthem joining us at sporting events. Started at baseball after the seventh inning stretch in a World Series around World War I, became very patriotic, and then little by little, before the end of World War II, is when it became a fixture of all of American sports, and it is one of our great traditions. I'd love, I don't care where you go with this, give me Francis Scott Key, give me the Battle of Baltimore, give me the actual story, of, if you have any, of the flag that we still honor at the Museum of American History in the Smithsonian, or baseball and the National Anthem. Anything National Anthem I would love.
Sure. The story of Francis Scott Key is pretty amazing, right? That here was this young man, right? He was a poet. He was writing things down. And he was actually a prisoner on board one of the British ships. And he's out in the harbor, and he sees all this going on in Baltimore Harbor. And he starts, he's like, hey, quick, give me a pen, right? He's kind of watching this out his little porthole window. And he's furiously scribbling this poetic message that goes on to become this wonderful, you know, it was set to music many, many years later, right? It wasn't until the late 1800s that it was set to music and became our national anthem as we know and love it today. But here was this man who was just watching it unfold out of a porthole window. And it became this pivotal, you know, moment for us, right? That you go to a ball game, any game, right? Any, you know, I'm a big NBA guy, so, you know, you go to the game and you see, you know, all right, Pledge of Allegiance. You know, yeah. We're going to have the Star Spangled Banner, right? We're going to have this moment of America. And it's because of some guy sitting there staring out of a porthole watching his beloved city getting shelled.
Oh, I got so lucky. My wife and I and the girls, we went to Washington, D.C., family vacation. And we did it around the 4th of July. So you can imagine the place is packed. But we did the 4th of July at the very end of the trip. So we were there right after when? The NBA draft. Because that's whenever I go on vacation is after the NBA draft. One of the first things we do is go to the Museum of Natural or of American History before really the crowds get there. I don't know how this happened, but we walk through the beginning portions where it sets up the story of the flag. And then we walk in and the flag is now behind a big case, black paneling, black light to protect the flag. My girls had already left, and it ends up being my wife, me, and a security guard, and that's it. Sitting there for, we sat there for like 20, 25 minutes just alone with the flag. It was the most awe-inspiring moment of my life to sit there. And then wouldn't you know it, 3 days later, there's an hour line to get it towards the flag. How we got that lucky to have 20 minutes alone with the flag and with our friend Henry, the security guard, I have no idea. But it was just incredible. My last question isn't a question. I just want you to riff on anything I didn't lead you to. It can be a story of sports. It can be a story of America, story of global history. Just give us one more story, Professor.
Absolutely. Let me tell you two stories,
okay,
right? Both personal to me, right? So let me tell you about Isaac Peterson Collier, right? Young Georgia boy, enters the Civil War, wrong side, right? Believe me, I was a Braves fan.
This is interesting, as a Georgia guy.
I was a Braves fan before I was a Diamondbacks fan, right? So his motivation, why he signed up, was not, you know, he didn't care about slavery. He didn't care about whatever. He just wanted to protect his farm, right, his family. So he and his brothers all signed up, right? Which usually when you have more than one brother in a Civil War, it's going to be bad news. Well, all five of them made it through the war, right? Which is pretty miraculous in itself.
Yes.
So he was a sergeant at the Battle of Kennesaw, right? My aunt lives right across the street from Kennesaw Battlefield today. It's a beautiful park. And there's a memorial there for Isaac Peterson Collier, right? He didn't die there, but he did an act of heroism, right? He was with his men, and it was getting desperate. The Union was closing in on all sides, which part of me is like, yay, right? You know, rooting for that. But he was with his men, and they were taking very heavy fire from all sides, right? They were towards the top of the hill, and grenades started coming in, right? This is prototypical, you know, these are the prototype grenades, yes, right? That were kind of little, is it going to explode? Is it not, right? So they kept throwing them into the trench, and he kept throwing them out. And they would go, you know, he'd throw down, some of them would explode.
So therefore, he's not running, he's running to the grenade.
He's running to the grenade.
Normally, you try to run away from the grenade.
Exactly. Okay. So he runs to the grenade. This is my great-grandfather times five, right? Okay. So he throws the grenades out.
No, wait, this is your personal.
This is my personal.
Your personal great-great-great-great-great-great-great.
Correct.
Okay.
So he's throwing grenades out. Long story short, the battle ends, right? He gets moved on to a different area. He serves out the rest of the war, winds up, you know, in South Carolina somewhere, gets repatriated home, decides war is stupid. I'm going to just kind of go back to my quiet little house and lives the rest of his days as a, you know, kind of studying the Bible for his, you know. But while he was on the battlefield, he was offered a commission, right? It was very rare in the Southern military at the time to kind of give commendations, right? They didn't give awards or medals out. They didn't really do that kind of thing. The best you could kind of hope for it would be to mention in one of the dispatches by the general to say, so-and-so did a really good job,
okay.
Right? That was like the pinnacle. And so his name was mentioned in one of the dispatches, and he was offered a battlefield promotion right there on the spot. They're like, we're gonna make you a first lieutenant. We're gonna take you over here to run this platoon. And he turned it down. He's like, I don't want to be taken away from my men, right? These guys are more important. This is why I'm here, right? I don't care about your other stuff. I'm just here for these guys. So I think that's kind of a beautiful story that we could transport that story into any war, right? That there's going to be that story of somebody who's willing to sacrifice whatever because of the guy next to him. And at the end of the day, that's kind of the heart of combat, right? That's the heart of a battle. Is whoever's next to you.
Well, I'm pretty intimidated that this is a personal story of your own family, and yet you told that as your second of the two stories you want to tell. So you've raised the bar here for story number one.
So let me tell you the story of a young immigrant to America, right? Nick Nicoli.
Nick Nicoli.
Santa Giuseppe Nicoli.
Wow, you are educating me. Never heard of this man.
So he is from Italy. He was born in America with his immigrant parents, but then he moved back to Italy for a time, and then he came back as a young man. Worked digging ditches, right? So he was digging ditches, and he would study, you know, and he got his degree. And then he also got something amazing, which was a private pilot's license, right? Digging ditches, right? So didn't mind a little hard work, right? Here's this Italian immigrant, puts himself to school, gets a pilot license. World War II starts. He's a little tiny man, right? He was like 5'1".
Oh my gosh.
And maybe 5'2" if he had the right shoes on, right? Little tiny guy, goes sign up in the Army. They're not gonna take him, right? Too short. It's like, well, I wanna be a pilot. No, right? Army Air Corps is like pass, right? Navy passes, goes to the Marine Corps, starts making a scene, right? I want to be a pilot, right?
So far, you're describing the beginning of Captain America, right? Is what I'm thinking of. Does he take any serum or anything like that?
That would have been an amazing story. No, but so the Marines obviously see fight in this guy, and so they're like, all right, well, he's got a private pilot's license, he's got a degree, he meets all our requirements, stand on this phone book, right? So he gets into the Marines, goes through training, meets this lovely woman who outranks him, right? This beautiful story where they meet at the recruit depot in San Diego, and she's an officer. She's working in kind of the quartermaster, you know. And so he's a young officer, fall in love, they get married. And he ships off to war, and he becomes a pilot. So he flies F-4 Corsairs. He flew dive bombers and then transferred over to Corsairs because that was the slick, shiny plane, right? And during his time, he wrote over 400 letters home, right? I have that box of letters at home, every single one of them, right? And he tells this beautiful story that unfolds of his life, right? That while he's on ship and he's bored and he misses his wife and his wife is pregnant. And then while he's away, they have their son, right? And it's this beautiful, these beautiful letters outpouring, just the heart of it. So he was a Marine, right? So Marines are riflemen first. Doesn't matter if you're in a Corsair, you're gonna be a rifleman. So he's serving throughout the Pacific, and he's on this little island, you know, maybe you've heard of it, Okinawa. And so he's flying missions over Okinawa almost every single day. But during his off time, he was kind of an adventurous spirit. So there's a story in one of his letters that he writes about having gone on an expedition, is what he called it. So they were staying at this tent camp by cliffs, right? And so he hikes down the cliff with a couple guys, right? He grabbed his like crew chief and a couple other guys. You know, he's a pilot, right? So you know, he's like borrows somebody's rifle, and you know, they load up for bear and they go wandering because they're going to go explore these caves. And so they're exploring these caves, and boy, seems like everything's a little too fresh, right? These ashes are still hot. Oh, the food is still pretty good, right? So he starts running into this stuff, and he starts looting, right? So he finds a Japanese officer's sword, and you know, finds some other memorabilia that he brings out, and he's hiking back. He feels pretty successful, right? I've done this thing. And a patrol of Marines is passing him down. And they're like, sir, you can't go down there. We haven't cleared that one out yet. He didn't care, right? He was a Marine. It's like, whatever happens down there, so what? So he ships the sword home, and it's still in my wife's family today.
Oh,
so
my
it was
gosh.
My wife's grandfather. I got to meet Nick, you know, he lived with her parents for years, and so I got to meet and have conversations with him. Very interesting guy, such a good storyteller. Oh, I wish I had a tenth of his skill,
yes.
Right? But just this amazing sense of kind of cluelessness, but also presence,
yes.
Right? Like fearlessness. Mm. So.
Thank you for coming on. As an official general now of the Unplugged Army, especially with the stories, you are now a Memorial Day tradition.
Awesome.
So we will see you again next year. Members of the Unplugged Army, now let's give a salute to our real army. And I just realized, if I could ask my daughter, they brought us our beer for our show and we forgot. I wanted it for the show and we didn't get a chance to do it. So please bring over both beers.
We could do a beer Friday.
Absolutely. A beer Monday now for us. Who knows how hot it is, because it's about 100 degrees in here. And thank you very much. Yeah, it's warm, so this is going to take a lot from me.
So here we have an upside down ale, Golden.
Okay. So number one, to the United States of America and to all that have paid the most ultimate price so all of us can be free, to every family member that has survived, and for the continued graciousness of God to bestow on us the greatest country in the history of the world. Cheers, America.
Thanks for watching Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass, a special Memorial Day edition that I'm just recording from the house today, and poor CEO Chris and Jeff Weir Production trying to slap everything together. Diamondbacks, kind of a loser this weekend. They lost 7-2 on Friday. They lost 2-1 on Saturday, and they lost 4-2 on Sunday. The frustrating thing for me is it really has everything to do with Saturday's game, not necessarily the other game, Saturday's game, because of the offense. Friday's game, Brandon Pfaadt really still fighting himself, so he gets shelled pretty bad. 3 2/3 of an inning, gives up 5 earned runs, and then that's it. And when I say that's it, I mean that's it for him right now as a member of the Diamondbacks. He got sent down to Reno after the game as the battle intensified for who's going to be able to keep their spot now that Zach Davies is back healthy. And I hate to say it, I love that Brandon Pfaadt got sent down. I think he earned the spot out of spring training, but they didn't give it to him. And then he has struggled since he's been brought up, had one good outing, one okay outing, and mostly has not pitched well at all. Now, I don't lose any faith whatsoever in the prospect that is Brandon Pfaadt. I think he's going to be a really good pitcher. I'm not saying Hall of Fame or something like that, but I think he's going to be a good pitcher. And some great pitchers, really great players in the history of the game, come up, get a sampling, and they realize just how hard Major League Baseball is. They get sent down to the minors, and it gives them an opportunity to regroup, refocus, and sometimes really learn what the staff has been talking to you about. Because here's why this is kind of difficult, if you think about it, is when you're a kid who's got great stuff, you have an opinion of yourself that you're going to be awesome all the time. And then
you rely on what's got you there. So you're better than the competition. You usually can blow them away with your fastball. So you become reliant on the fastball, and a minor league hitter has a lot more swings and misses at fastballs that aren't strikes. When you get to the major league level, those same pitches that you're getting swings and misses on are now being taken for a ball. So now you're behind in the count, and now you've got to challenge more of the plate. When you do it, you get raked. Plus, you can't go deep into games because since the pitches are being taken for a ball, you're wasting a lot of pitches and you're having these 20, 25, 30 pitch innings. So you get back to the minor leagues and you've learned the lesson. I've got to have better fastball command and I've got to mix in my secondary stuff more often. So I'm assuming a Brandon Pfaadt is not going to go down to the minor leagues now and just try to blow people away, chase them off the plate, have them swing and miss and think he's had a great outing. He'll know that he needs to learn to be a pitcher. And in order to be a pitcher, that's totally different than being a thrower. And I think a lot of his minor league career, he was a thrower. Now, that doesn't mean he's a terrible guy, a terrible player. It just means he needs more time to learn how to be a real life pitcher. And a lot of kids come up as great throwers. It's a positive that he's got such good stuff. I mean, if he didn't have good stuff, he wouldn't have gotten this far. So his arm is electric. He's still a fantastic player. Don't worry about that. He just needs to learn to go down and be a pitcher. So they get beat up pretty bad, 7-2. Runners in scoring position, however, the offense was only 1-for-9, okay, against Boston. And then Saturday they got embarrassed offensively and give a ton of credit. Zach Davies gives up 2 earned runs and 3 1/3. That's not all that thrilling, but he's coming back from an injury. Okay. The bullpen did everything right. 5 2/3 of an inning and no earned runs. And the Diamondbacks still lose. So they only give up 2 earned runs as a pitching staff. The bullpen totally shuts the door and the offense only gets 3 hits. That's an embarrassment. And they lose on a safety squeeze, which, yes, it was well executed. But come on, I thought you're a good defensive team. You pride yourself on defense, anticipate that play, shut it down, even though it's well executed. And it's almost impossible to stop when it's well executed. Hey, if you're a good team, you're a good team. You anticipate it. You get it taken care of. So they lose 2 out of 3 and they do win yesterday. Merrill Kelly, 6 1/3 innings pitched. 10 strikeouts, 1 earned run. Perdomo and Carroll each went yard with a homer, and Marte and Gurriel went 2-for-4. And it's just crazy, the streak that Lourdes Gurriel has been on for most of his time as a member of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Last week, we talked about how great this trade has been so far for the Diamondbacks to get 2 starting players for 1, and both of them are dominatingly outperforming Dalton Varsho, who was the one that was traded to Toronto. So they have been just fantastic. So that gets me jacked up. And the performance of Merrill Kelly, he's back on his roll. Remember how bad he struggled earlier in the year coming off of the World Baseball Classic. It's taken him a while to get into a rhythm, but that was the performance of an ace yesterday. Because with you being on your first 3-game losing streak of the season, and it looks like you're being outclassed by Boston, which they were, to get a pitcher to come in and just absolutely shut the door, that's what an ace does. An ace stops losing streaks. And Merrill Kelly was excellent. So that gets, I mean, that gets you going a little bit. Now, the Dodgers, they were on the road at Tampa Bay, and they lost 2 out of 3. Granted, much harder competition. The Rays are a much better team than Boston. Boston's no slouch. They're an above 500 team. But just for an example, if you don't know, the American League, it's dominatingly different than the National League right now. The Diamondbacks are the number one team in the wild card. Okay, they got a 3-game lead on number 2. But the 2 teams at 2 and 3 in the wild card race in the National League, they are 500 teams. So just get to 500, you're in the National League playoffs. Right now, if you're a 500 team in the American League, you're nowhere near the playoffs. Okay, you're about 4, 5, 6 games back of the playoffs. I believe the Yankees are the last team in the wild card right now. I might be wrong on that. But they've got like a, I don't know, something like they're 7 or 8 games above 500. And that's what it takes to get into the playoffs in the American League. So the Rays, much better than the Dodgers. They take two out of three. So therefore, the Diamondbacks don't lose any ground by losing two out of three to Boston. It just stinks that the Rays, you know, that the Dodgers are in this tough stretch of amazingly good teams that they're playing. And the Diamondbacks really haven't been able to take much of an advantage. So Diamondbacks are a game and a half back of the Dodgers. And now the D-backs take on the Rockies today. Day game at 110. That should be advantage Diamondbacks because the Rockies were at home. It's always hard to fly out of Denver. They come in for a day game, so they don't get proper rest. Ryan Nelson, whose numbers are starting to get a little better and a little better, he's going for the Diamondbacks. He'll throw the first pitch, like I said, at 110. I think this is advantage Diamondbacks taking on Colorado. I'm not going to be talking about D-backs and versus Vegas, however, because I don't want to put any money on Ryan Nelson. But the Rockies are terrible. The Rockies are traveling. The Rockies have a day game after a long flight. Not a long flight, but after a tough travel day, because whenever you fly out of Colorado, it's a tough travel day. I look for the Diamondbacks to get a win and hopefully take this series, take three games out of four in this series. All right, coming up next. This means a lot to me. It was a really wonderful conversation I had. It's going to be from the lobby of the National Cemetery that's up at Scottsdale, kind of learning the history of the cemetery and learning. And I also met a 102-year-old man while I was there. It was a really cool experience. And this is part of my tribute on a little bit of sports, but also a Memorial Day celebration here on Doug Frantz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass on WTSMTV.com.
It's big, it's juicy, it's meaty. Get your burrito at Burrito Express. If you're having a hangover, a bad day, even a good day, still get your burrito at Burrito Express. It will make you feel better.
Burrito Express started with my father about 25 years ago. He got laid off and decided that he needed to do something to provide for his family. My brother and I were older teens, 17, 18 year old, and I'm going to do a trial out of my house. So literally we decided we're going to start out of his house. So we delivered menus in a square mile area, literally started delivering burritos out of our home in Mesa, Arizona. And after about a month, he said, let's do this. Went and found his first location. And believe it or not, that's how it started. We started with one location back in 1995. Now we're where we are now.
Thanks, guys, for allowing me to again be a part of this special treat. We're broadcasting right now from the National Memorial Cemetery. They have all kinds of paid employees from the Veterans Affairs Department. They have all kinds of different volunteers that come out to help as well in the Visitor Center. And Specialist Matthew Michael Nelson was nice enough to come over and answer a couple questions. Well, first of all, from the bottom of every American's heart, thank you for your service. And if you don't mind, before we get into the cemetery, tell us a little bit about you. Where are you from and where did you serve?
I served up in the Minnesota Army National Guard. I joined at about 18, 19 years old. I actually joined shortly after 9/11 happened. Like many other men and young men and women of the time, it was kind of an alarm bell for the country then, I guess during my generation. And that's where my service kind of began.
Again, sorry to repeat myself, but thank you. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but even though you're from Minnesota, that amazingly resonates with Arizonans because that's the exact same story of Pat Tillman. Of Pat Tillman getting ready to, he's got a huge Arizona Cardinals contract coming his way, and then sees 9/11, finishes out the season in 2001 as a player, and then enlists, becomes a Ranger because his brother was already in the Rangers, and I mean, he had the chance to make an awful lot of money on his second contract and said, no, America first, and then ended up dying in overseas. And it's just such a powerful story for all of us Arizonans, because he went to Arizona State, played for the Arizona Cardinals, and had the same story that you did. Saw 9/11 and said, this is my calling. So that gets to all of us as Arizonans. Now, if you don't mind, tell us about the National Memorial Cemetery and any of the history that you know, or any stories that you know, or simply the things that you've seen while you have been here.
I would say that most of my history here is relatively recent. I've been here about a year and a half now, and even in my time here, I've seen the cemetery expand exponentially. There's been a bunch of new areas that have been opening up, and also columbariums as well that have been under construction for a while that are nearing their completion dates. And all of that is in the near future going to be opened up.
So for those of you that also might not realize, it was a state cemetery in the 70s, became a federal cemetery in 1989. And we have veterans who sadly lost their lives recently that are buried here, dating all the way back to the Spanish-American War, as there was a man that lived in Arizona in his later years, lived to be past 100 years old, but fought for his country in the Spanish-American War, which dates to the 19th century. Is with the end of the 19th century was when the Spanish-American War is. So you could see, before Arizona is a state, we actually have a veteran of a war before we were a state. So that's kind of exciting and sad and beautiful all at the same time. If you would, tell me about how Americans can best absorb, feel, and celebrate, quote unquote, Memorial Day. I realize you're just one man, so I'm not asking you to represent everybody that's ever been in the Army, but what touches you for people to give back on Memorial Day?
Working in this place, what makes Memorial Day exceptionally different from any other day, and every day here is a special day because we're honoring veterans and their families, and everybody has their own personalized moment here. But Memorial Day is unique because of all the community involvement. It's just a big investment of all the people that come, all the organizations involved, and all the commitment involved in it. And there's a whole different kind of energy then.
The thing that, you know, I immediately noticed as I was walking around was just the different stones and the desert, because for me, I've had the thrill, beauty, and sadness to walk around Arlington National Cemetery, and that's one of the most amazing things you can ever do as American, to walk around there. But also, I'm a history buff, and to know that that was Robert E. Lee's, you know, former land. And it's just very strange that that was the connection. That's Virginia. That is the South. And yet it's right next door to our nation's capital. But then you're here, and the desert provides so much of a different level of respect and isolation. I mean, the white cross is up in front of the green grass at Arlington. That's, I mean, that hits you. But even here, you feel the, I guess, almost the sadness and isolation that you could feel. And it brings you in full respect. At least that's for me. What emotions does walking around here in your quiet time kind of invoke?
In some ways, it's kind of a time capsule, kind of a museum in a way. It's a snapshot in history everywhere you look.
Lastly, if you could tell everybody that's watching us right now what they can do to either help Veterans Affairs, help the National Memorial Cemetery right here in Phoenix, or in anything that you would like to tell them that they can do to even help this country, help us locally, help this cemetery. What's your message?
I would say what gives this country meaning, what gives the armed services meaning, is representation of people investing themselves in this country. It means they believe in it. If the citizens invest themselves fully in a country, it shows the essence of a country. It makes a country what it is.
Thanks. That was fantastic. John F. Kennedy, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you could do for your country. Seems to make perfect sense on this Memorial Day. For Specialist Matthew Michael Nelson, my name's Doug Franz. Back to you guys in the studio.
Our Jeff Production? Ah, sorry, Jeff. I forget what he calls you. Of course, Izzy's in the building as well. We're going to get you through this next 30 minutes or so. Main events. Look, we're starting it now. Let's do it. Let's rock it. Hey, what we do is here we just on the fly here here at WTSM-TV. Look, everybody, first of all, let's get this out of the way, right? Memorial Day is a special day where we honor those that have served, given the ultimate sacrifice for us to be allowed to do this stuff. So, of course, keep everybody in your thoughts today. And whatever you're doing, be safe here on this Monday, whether you're going to the lake, barbecuing, movies. Just have a safe day and enjoy and keep everybody in your thoughts sacrificed to get us to this point where we are today. Look, over the weekend, of course, big weekend. NBA, Celtics did it, right? We're here at a game 7. We're going to get you previewed for that tonight. And we have a referee controversy in the NBA, if you haven't seen this yet, regarding who is refereeing this game tonight. It's going to be fantastic. Of course, NHL, Dallas Stars stay alive as well. 3-2 series going into tonight's game in Dallas. Oh, boy. Knights might be in trouble. They have lost their edge going into this game, of course. Indy 500 was this weekend. We're actually going to talk racing tomorrow with Talking Racing. Normally we do it on Monday. But because the Xfinity Series of NASCAR, it's about ready to go. 8 a.m. here is the green flag there in Charlotte. Of course, the race was postponed on Saturday to today. And then the Cup race last night, the Coca-Cola 600, was moved till today at about noon our time here in Phoenix. So those races are going off today. So if you missed, you got the Indy 500, which was a fantastic finish last night, and you look into, of course, tonight's racing, or looking forward to Coca-Cola 600 last night, you get to look forward to a daytime here today. Kind of harken back to the old days of when these races were on Memorial Day and not on the Sunday before Memorial Day. So, exciting day here. I'm going to keep my eye on the Xfinity race during the show, of course. And then we go off air at 10 o'clock. Lead you right into that. So, I want to thank everybody for joining us here on this Memorial Day. Hopefully, you got the day off. If not, look, hashtag TME show. Let me know where you work. DM me if you don't want to put it public, and I'll have a conversation with your boss to get you next holidays off, right? Labor Day is coming up. July 4th is coming up. Let's get you the holidays off. That's one of our services that we do here at the main event as we go through this fantastic holiday that we all get to celebrate. So as you saw on Doug's show, right, as he was doing it, you know, he just had the interviews and everything. Special day. For those interviews, if you missed them, go back, catch the on-demand of those interviews, and it gets you just set up for Memorial Day and what this day means to all of us Americans out there. So, you know, we found out over the weekend that the NBA is investigating a referee. Well, that's exciting. Not for gambling for once. Hey, NBA's improved. Not even a gambling referee at this point. We'll get into that talk because it's burner accounts are going to kill you guys, man. Do not have burner accounts. You're going to get caught. And, of course, you know, he's being investigated for that now. You know, the French Open is underway, right? I believe it's the French Open going on this weekend. One of the tennis majors. Look, we don't talk a lot of tennis here. But you got to love the majors, right? All four of them this weekend. Hey, the good story, right, of the gentleman who finished 15th at the PGA Championship? Womp, womp. That's the problem. You know, Charles Schwab this weekend, we'll get into that, see where he, well, didn't even finish. Oof. Great story that, nosedived back to reality this weekend in the Charles Schwab. I'm not laughing at him or his finish. I'm more laughing of, you know, what a great story it was and how fast it came crashing down, you know, by going to the Charles Schwab. You should have ended it at the PGA Championship. So what would you do?
I think you should have ended it, too.
Yeah, right? You finish 15th. Unheard of. Unheard of.
He should have just
and you go home, right?
Packed it up there.
Yeah. Because, 15 over in his tournament, you know. I agree with you, man, because what are you going to think of? You're not going to think of you'll think of your PGA championship, but then everybody's going to go, yeah, but then you suck the next week.
Exactly.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you'd be a local hero. Yeah. If you finished after that PGA Championship top 15, the way he golfed in that, you know, hit that big putt. He did have that nice par save off of the bridge. That was about his only highlight. It was brutal. If you do something completely unexpected, pack it in. Don't extend it. That's the moral. Look, he was getting interviews all week. He was on every golf channel that I saw, every news channel that I saw getting interviewed. He's sitting there laid back all week long. Yep, all gone. I hope he enjoyed his 15 minutes of fame. Of course, Diamondbacks this weekend. Yikes. Play a good team and look what happens, man. Lose a series. Interesting set on the Diamondbacks, though. That fascinates me. This team has not been swept yet this year. Now, they were on the verge of being swept going into yesterday. Merrill Kelly steps up and has a great game. And a surprise on who went down with Zach Davies coming back on Saturday. It's not surprising when you read the reasons why Brandon Pfaadt went down to Reno, because they were concerned about his fastball. And they've talked about his fastball all along, during his starts up here. But I think he was, every time we did a poll, I think he was the last guy to go down, especially since he started playing well. Of course, his last start was not a good start either. So we'll get into all of that stuff. Of course, Colorado Rockies. The next matchup, you know, worst team here in the NL West. So hopefully the Diamondbacks can keep the series or get the series wins back out there again as we get going here on this Memorial Day. Game 7 tonight, Celtics and Heat. Hey, Jeff, you said you're not a Celtics fan. I know you're a Boston guy.
Yeah, I'm a Celtics fan, but that's the only team in Boston that I like. I hate every other team.
I got confused. That's right, because I hate the Bruins, and that made me laugh. But, man, so what are you feeling tonight, man? 5:30 p.m., first pit tip. Let's get your thoughts on this. How are you feeling? They've won 3 in a row. Can they finish this off?
Yeah, I haven't been keeping up with the series at all. I've been pretty busy at work and everything, but I'm a Boston fan, so yeah, I'm hoping they can do it for sure.
Man, I don't know. They got so lucky the other night. By the way, let's do a little production on air here. Hey, Jeff, tell Izzy that he has videos in his folder that he can have. Because we do have video that we can play of that game-winning shot. If you missed it, I know everybody's busy this weekend. And it's not something I need now, Jeff, just for some time during the show. But the Celtics are favored tonight by 7 points in this game 7.
Nice. I'll take it.
Would you?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. The way the Heat lost that game, I think obviously this is the stupidest thing I can say today. I'll probably say something stupider. But let's start off with something dumb.
As you say stupider?
Yeah, let's start off with something dumb. And with my bad English too. It's going to go one of two ways for the Heat. They're either going to be super motivated with the way they lost that, or they're just going to go in the tank because of the way they lost that.
Right.
Boom, there's my analysis, Jeff. How about that? It doesn't get more deep than that, folks.
Yeah.
And I don't know which way it's going to go. I have no idea. Obviously, the Boston fans are going to be crazy and nuts, right, going into this game tonight. But, it could go the same way with the Celtics, though. They could be on such a high that they won that game the way they won it. They thought they were done for the most part.
Yeah.
And, man, adding that 3 seconds, going, when Jimmy Butler's three-point was reviewed and they gave him the three-pointer, and, of course, he hit all three to take the one-point lead, and then they put 3 seconds back on the clock. Obviously, that was the difference in the game because the Celtics scored with the putback in with 0.1 seconds left on the clock. So in the NBA, the two-minute report, they come out with a two-minute report where they break down fouls and things that happened in that 2 minute where the referees messed up, missed calls, etc. And they actually published that. They actually came out and said there was no issues in that two-minute report in terms of that foul, the time put back on the clock, or any of that stuff. So nothing really to complain about. It was just a, quite frankly, lucky finish for the Celtics, in this game.
Yeah.
Now you were at the Rattlers game when that happened, right?
I was, yeah.
So you had me and Izzy were here. We were watching it while we were watching the Sugar Skulls. As we were, Jeff Weir Production. I think that's what he calls you, right?
It is, yeah.
Was at the Rattlers game with Doug doing the pregame and postgame for that Rattlers victory on Saturday night. Izzy and I do the pregame and the postgame here from the WTSM studios for the Tucson Sugar Skulls. And we were watching it. I yelled at Izzy, and I was like, turn this game on! Because holy cow, what a finish, man.
Oh, yeah.
So we got to watch the Stars, right, beat the Knights, which that ended up being a dud as the Stars scored 2 goals late to win 4-2. And then that Celtics game was fantastic. Your Rattlers, by the way, there, Jeff. How exciting. Now, let me ask you this. When it's a blowout like it was and the Rattlers dominate, does that get kind of boring for you? Are you one of those guys?
No, I love it.
All right.
I thought it was a great game. Right. I thought it was a really good game.
They won, 66-33 or something
66.
Like that.
It was 30-something. 66 to 30-something.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So I get kind of bored in those scenarios. I do.
Do you really?
Yeah. It's, blowout. I'd rather see a close game and my team lose than a blowout a lot of times.
Yeah.
Obviously, you want to see your team win however they do, and I'm not going to complain about that. but it can get a little bit boring. Look, the Sugar Skulls were in a defensive battle, in the IFL, how many times do you say a defensive battle? And they ended up going down. Turnovers was the difference. They ended up losing 44-42. Womp womp, right?
Yeah.
The Panthers ended up taking the lead late in that game. But even that game got a little boring, and it was a nail biter because there wasn't a lot of scoring going on. Look, I can never be happy, I guess.
Yeah. You're a hard man to please, Steve.
I think it was just because it was Saturday night, because that hockey game. And then basketball was going on, and then I think it was just a combination of all three there. And plus, this as well, Jeff, that when you're in the stadium in those situations, like when you're watching it, like I was watching it here at WTSM TV, it's a completely different situation, right?
Oh, for sure.
So you had the crowd there. How was the crowd at those Rattler games? I see they're pretty full.
Oh yeah, it was really really good. They had a huge turnout.
Yeah, so, it's funny, man, when you watch these, the Sugar Skulls, I don't know what it was on Saturday night. I'll try to look that up here. But I know the Rattlers, if they don't lead attendance in the IFL, they are one or two in terms of attendance. Because every time you look, man, they're full. Every other arena, Sugar Skulls have a good. I know their arena is a lot smaller, being in Tucson Arena. They're the Boneyard.
Yeah.
That's what they call it. But they get 4,000 or 5,000 people a game, which for down there with that stadium, I don't know what it actually seats. I should probably look that up before I start talking about it. But they get a solid crowd. I mean, it fills up that definitely around at least around the field and everything. But those Rattlers, man, it's amazing to watch that.
Yeah.
Do the crowd stay the whole time or do they take off early when it's
I didn't see like anybody that? Hitting the door.
Yeah,
they stayed.
I know when I used to go to games all this year, I haven't been to a game yet. I gotta get that there. And, of course, if you won the tickets here, got in the pool and won. I don't know who won the final tickets on Friday. Nobody told me.
Ryan. Oh, Chris. Help me out here, buddy.
There was a Ryan that won the tickets on Thursday.
Yeah.
I'll tell you right here. I'll tell you who won them on Thursday. Ryan Collins won them on Thursday. Keith Baylor won them on Wednesday.
Okay.
So, look at that. Production right here. Right here.
Look at you.
Yeah, look at me.
Let's get you in the control room.
Yeah, prepared here on this Monday. But I don't know who won on Friday. Hey, whoever you are who won them on Friday, congratulations.
Take that. First of all, thank you, Jeff, for your production. Thank you very much. And I know, because I was not influenced at all by Steve McCollum, and therefore I dominated versus Vegas last weekend, or this weekend. I dominated. And I think it's because I was untouched by the bad, you know, vibes that Steve McCollum has placed on versus Vegas. I am now officially back. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. All right. Versus Vegas today, I went 3-1 on Friday. 3-1. And I can't believe the one game that I missed. I mean, I barely missed. I barely missed. All right. Here's what I got for you. I took Bay Area. I actually had two IFL games for the first time. I've never even once looked at the IFL, but I looked up lines on the IFL going into the weekend, and I had Bay Area -3.5 at Tucson. I said, I know Bay Area is going to win, but they're going to cover that 3.5. They did not. They did win, but they did not cover. They beat Tucson 44-42. That stinks. I needed two more points. Are you kidding me? Two more points, and I'm a perfect 4-0 on Friday. So then I took the Rattlers on Saturday -6.5. I thought they'd smash Vegas, crush this one, as the Rattlers win 63-39, and they absolutely dominate the game. So Rattlers get that victory, and so do we. And then baseball-wise, I took Texas on the money line, and taking Baltimore was favored. Thought bad move, Vegas. Bad move. Orioles were favored. I took Texas on the money line, got positive juice for it for a +118. Rangers killed them. They won 12-2 over Baltimore, so I nailed that pick. And then I also thought it was ridiculous that Oakland was traveling. Houston favored only by a run and a half. They didn't get the dreaded 2.5 on the run line. Houston wins 5-2 over Oakland. So I go 3-1. Thank you. Thank you. I go 3-1 on the weekend. That improves the record to 869, 786-1. And I also had fantastic juice on the weekend as well. So I'm pretty happy about that. All right, games today. I'm a little nervous. I admit, I'm a little nervous. I am not touching NBA or NHL at all. There's no way, because what happens a lot, and let's do NBA first. What happens a lot in a game seven is you'll have guys fight, play hard, as you know, blah, blah, blah. But if it's not close near the end, then it just becomes a blowout. That'll happen a lot. And right now, Miami is a 7.5-point dog. I could easily see the Celtics winning by 9 or 10, especially hitting free throws at the end of the game and stretching out the lead. And I don't think Miami's ready to win. I know it's crazy to pick Miami to lose 4 straight and to become the first ever NBA team to be up 3-0 and not advance. I know that's crazy, but it's really simple. We're not talking about how did anybody get there. We're not talking about a 3-game losing streak for Miami and a 3-game winning streak for Boston. It's now just what's happening for Game 7. What do you think for Game 7? In Game 7, I have to believe the better team wins, and that's Boston. And I have to believe, when you look at the horrible officiating that allowed Jason Tatum to have 15 of 15 free throws, even though he didn't even hit a 3-pointer in Game 6. All right, you know how I feel about NBA officiating. We move forward. You're going to gamble on it, so therefore, go with Boston. But the money line's like -300. That's too much juice. And I don't know if Miami's going to be able to keep it close. I think it'll be close, and then I think Boston wins by 10. But I don't believe it enough to touch that game. And I don't have any idea about hockey. None whatsoever. Vegas is starting to fall on their face. Dallas is coming back. And now Dallas has an opportunity to make it a game seven if they win today in game six. I'm not touching that one. So none of the big boys am I looking at. My three games for, I got three games for you, Major League Baseball wise. I love the Cubs and the Rays. The Rays just had a huge series against the Dodgers. The Rays took two out of three from the LA Dodgers, and they won the last game 11-10. So it's a drag out fight. Then they have a day game in Wrigley, so they leave Tampa, fly up to Chicago to have to face a day game. That's crazy. That's too much travel after a huge series. I see letdown. Plus the Cubs are pitching their only pitcher that's any good. So I love the Cubs, and I'm getting the run line. So I got Cubs plus 1.5 against the Rays. Same thing with the Yankees. The Yankees were playing at Yankee Stadium. Now they fly all the way out to Seattle to play the Mariners and without a day off. And Seattle's pitching one of their best pitchers. So I'm going to take Seattle on the money line against the New York Yankees. Juice isn't that bad. Seattle was at home. I think that's an easy pick. And then the Twins had to fly in from Minnesota and go down to Houston. Astros, they're pitching a young pitcher in J.P. France, who's, I mean, I don't want to act like I know everything about him, but so far he's looked good. So I like the Astros on the money line beating Minnesota because of the travel of Tampa Bay, the Yankees, and Minnesota. I got Cubs with the run line plus 1.5, and I got Seattle and Houston on the money line. Again, I said this at the beginning of the show. Thanks a ton, CEO Chris, Jeff Weir Production. Sorry that I fell asleep and slept last night. I did not mean to go to bed, and I didn't go to bed. I fell asleep in my chair. And thanks a lot to Kevin Miller for everything that he did to make today's show great. And obviously, Steve and Izzy, who's getting ready to do their show on the main event, and they'll be doing it live. Thanks to them for kind of what we call in the business back timing to be able to adjust the show from where it was going to go and then making sure it fits in, getting out on time. Guys, I really appreciate it, and I hope you have a great show. Thanks a lot to Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. Proud sponsor of Doug Franz Unplugged. 602-2-REPAIR is their phone number. You hungry today? You want Bell's Nashville Kitchen, Main Street in Scottsdale, Old Town, just a hair east of Scottsdale Road. Or you can go to Rosati's, the official sports bar of Doug Franz Unplugged, but only the one at Ray and McQueen in Chandler. And then there's Burrito Express, home of my daughter's favorite, the steak and salsa. I love the Burrito Supreme, so get that at Burrito Express today. And of course, the presenting sponsor of Doug Franz Unplugged, that is Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. The main event is coming up next. Thank you, America, and thanks to our troops. I'll see you tomorrow.